ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Tuesday, December 4th, 2018. I'm Kevin Larame, Dwayne Mullins on the line, and joining us today to start our MLS Cup week, Rudy Schuler of the Sporting News. Rudy, how you doing today?
I'm not too bad. How are you guys?
I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing that I'm not checking the weather report obsessively during this MLS Cup buildup over like the last 2 years. This is going to, I think, be okay in Atlanta and in Zorz. We'll get to TFC maybe in a minute, but let's just start with there. How impressed are you with how quickly Atlanta got to MLS Cup? And are you a little bit jealous as someone who's covered TFC since 2007?
Well, I think it's just the next step in what MLS is trying to become, to be quite honest. They've quickly become the model franchise in the league, taking their cues from the Seattles and NYCFCs and before that, TFCs. And I think it's a good step in a good step forward. Now, of course, every club is different than others, and Atlanta has shown that it's got its own kind of project and footprint that it wants to put on the league and the South American influence that it's got. I would say that I'm very surprised in the fan base itself. We saw a couple of years ago that the fan base would look good. It looked like it would be impressive. I didn't think it would eclipse Seattle as fast as it did. Who talks about Seattle anymore? You know what I mean? In terms of fan bases, it's crazy. Especially coming out of Atlanta, which historically and traditionally hasn't been the greatest in terms of supporting their franchises. If you watch an Atlanta Hawks game, it's just awful. Of course, they lost not one but two hockey teams, and so on and so forth. You can go down the line of failed Atlanta sports teams in terms of fan support. So they're bucking the trend, not only within the league itself, but also within their own market, and they're reaping the rewards. You know, this is a team that can afford to spend $15 million on a very speculative transfer, as they did for Ezequiel Barco, who, let's be honest, hasn't been that great. But you know, they have the money for it because of the massive fan base. So, to me, this is the club now that's pushing the rest of the clubs to do better and to be bigger. And I think, overall, that's a very good thing for MLS.
When you look at the expansion teams that are coming in, obviously there's a couple different models, and there's been a couple different models for a while. You're going to have FC Cincinnati come in, which is an established team, just like Minnesota was. You're going to have a team like Nashville and Miami come in, which are starting from scratch. And it seems to me, Rudy, and you can tell me whether you agree or disagree with this, that the advantage right now lies in starting with the clean slate because of all of the TAM and GAM and extra little bit of advantages that MLS gives you with the world as your market. Should we anticipate that these new, bigger market, exciting market kind of teams that are going to come in, especially Miami, and immediately maybe not replicate completely Atlanta, but be able to get close to something they've done on the field?
Yeah, you can see just basically from when clubs have their expansion announcements and who the ownership groups are and where they want to play and you know, their stadium deals and all that stuff. You can see the statement of intent from ownership groups, depending on which club it is. Now, FC Cincinnati, they're gonna be very well supported. You know, they were getting 30,000 regularly in USL. There's no reason to think that's gonna go down. When they do build their stadium, I do believe it's gonna be a little bit smaller, but the prices will be higher to supplant that. But either way, they're gonna be selling out their stadium regularly. But that doesn't mean they're gonna be the big spenders like the Atlanta, like we expect. Miami to be and possibly Nashville as well. So I think it's exciting and I think it's a fun thing to look at because there's no one right way of building a team. We've seen just being here in Toronto, we've seen many different models with TFC itself, right? TFC's always been a rich club, but they've never always acted like it, or they maybe kind of acted like the drunk rich uncle who just throws money around rather than actually has a plan. I think that's what separates the good teams from the bad teams is having a plan. Now, you can have a plan and be poor and but relatively poor. Of course, none of these owners are poor, but relatively poor. You can't see me doing air quotes here, but still have a plan and execute. And that's what we've seen that with the Sporting KCs, who aren't really poor, but they're just a little bit more spendthrift than an Atlanta would be. Or you can have a big rich club like TFC, who was wandering the desert for so long until they decided to actually put pen to paper and make an actual plan, and it worked out for them last year. So to me, I think good management kind of replaces all the glitz and glamour. And if you can have both, then I think you're going to succeed for sure. But if you have to choose one thing, you're going to have you don't want to have the good management and the good structure and the good planning in place, because that's ultimately what leads to success.
All along this season, Rudy, in 2018, in the Eastern Conference, Atlanta was dominating until the end of the regular season, where the Red Bulls, which were behind Atlanta all year, had an amazing run to finish the season, supplanted Atlanta in the Eastern Conference and into the Supporters' Shield race, won the race, beat Toronto's record, and went into the playoff being one of the favorites. Atlanta had playoff woes last year, so we had a bit of a we need to see it before we truly trust their capabilities into no tomorrow football. But then the Eastern Conference Finals came, and Atlanta was the dominating team all across the board. How surprised were you by Atlanta's transformation into a regular season giant into an MLS Cup favorite?
Well, I think that the playoff failure from last year helped. I also believe that kind of getting those reality checks at the end of the regular season, I think that also helped. They got dominated by the Red Bulls, I believe it was in September or October of this year. And then they got beaten down by TFC in the last game of the season to lose the Supporters Shield. I think that kind of threw reality in their face a little bit, that they can't just play this one style of soccer all the time. They were very dogmatic in the way they wanted to play, which, to their credit, it worked for them for the most of the season. They wanted to play this high tempo, up and down, north south kind of game, where everything goes through Miguel Almirón and Joseph Martinez, and those are two of the best players in the league. So why wouldn't it, right? But there was no real plan B, and they noticed that in the regular season when the Red Bulls dominated them in that one game, and then and when TFC kind of gave them a second slap across the face for them to lose the Supporters' Shield, they realized that they need to change, and they need to change quickly, and they did it. They did it in the postseason, and I think that's with both teams in the Cup, and I'm sure we're going to talk about Portland soon, but I think both teams in MLS Cup noticed toward the end of the season that they need to make a change. They need to have a plan B. I think what we're seeing out of Atlanta here is a plan B. They're playing a little bit more pragmatically. They're not just tied down to one system. Of course, having a healthy Miguel Almirón obviously helps, but they're able to muck it up a little bit, because I think that's what the Red Bulls were so good at doing over the past few years. We saw that in the playoffs last year against Toronto, that in the Eastern Conference semifinal, where the Red Bulls really mucked it up and almost took Toronto out. It was the same thing in the regular season this year. They mucked it up. They play very down and dirty. Now, not that they're a dirty team, but they like to, they don't play the prettiest soccer all the time. And it works for them. It worked for them in the regular season. With the Red Bulls, they kind of fell victim to their own success as well. Very kind of similar to Atlanta, in that they didn't really have much of a plan B in the playoffs. So, they lost Kamar Lawrence, and all of a sudden they weren't able to press the way they wanted to, and they weren't able to play that high offensive style from pressing from the forwards and all the way through the team, because he's a very key cog. If you lose one player and your whole system kind of goes to crap, then you don't really have much of a system to begin with. So I think that that's what Atlanta noticed right away, and I think that New York was too quick. Sorry, New York was too slow to realize that, and that's why Atlanta was able to prevail, because they were able to play a little bit more of a down and dirty style. Because that's what we've seen in the playoffs. That's what you need to do. The best teams may not be the best teams in the playoffs because they're not able to tighten things up and play for those moments that you need to play for. They're looking to play pretty soccer. They're looking to play to their system that they played all year. Sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes a team comes out at you and and figuratively punches you in the mouth, and you have no answer for that. So I think that's what Atlanta, they found the answer for that, and I think that bodes well for them going into the into this MLS Cup final.
You mentioned players, system, and I'll add a coach. This is the last match of Tata Martino in charge of Atlanta United. It could be the last match of Miguel Almiron, and who knows, it could be the last match of Josef Martinez as well. There's been speculations around those two players, and it's official for Tata Martino. We know he's leaving, and we pretty much know as well that he's taking the Mexican national team job, but mm-hmm. that is yet to be confirmed. When you look at this MLS Cup, the last match of Atlanta 1.0 era, I guess.
Yeah.
What is going to be the key? Tata Martino's coaching, Josef Martinez's goals, or Miguel Almiron's overall play?
It's all of the above. It's all of the above, because I just mentioned that you can't only focus on one or two players, even though you know they're your best players and they're your game breakers. There's the little players that change games for you. Well, changing games, they only happen in moments, right? So there's still another 90 minutes of soccer to be played. That comes down to the rest of the team and the tactics, and that's what Tata Martino has to focus on. He knows that Miguel Almiron and Jose Martinez will be able to supply those moments of brilliance as long as they're on the ball and the time is right and the system is set up for them. So it's the rest of the players that need to be able to provide the ball to those guys and to provide the setting for those game-changing moments, and to also make sure that Portland doesn't, hit them on the counter like they've been doing against all the other teams in the playoffs. So it's all of the above for me. We've seen Atlanta change their system now. They've been able to kind of roll with the punches a little bit more, and I think they're going to have to do that, especially against this Portland team that really doesn't know how to do anything else but to grind games out, and with a couple of good game changers of their own. So. I think they'll be up for it. Atlanta will be. This is a game for Tata, and it's a game probably for Miguel Almiron as well. I think Josef Martinez is the least likely of the three to leave. We know that Tata's, of course, gone. They've already announced that he's gone. Like you said, they haven't announced where he's going yet, but I think they're just waiting until after MLS Cup. We know that Almiron has got a lot of suitors in Europe with some big money attached to him. Josef Martinez, he's already been to Europe. He's a little bit older than Almiron, so maybe he doesn't have as many suitors, but... maybe he's gone, maybe he's not, but I feel like this is a game for I think the team will be playing for Tata Martino, and of course for their home fans as well. So it's going to be all of the above in answering the question that you just made of me. Now I think that Tata's tactics and the way he sets up the game, the way he sets up the rest of the team, will determine how good Josef Martinez and Miguel Almiron are against the Portland Timbers.
Atlanta is truly going to be a reverse Drake, started from the top. Anyway, I had to go there. Rudy, yeah. Let's turn our attention to Portland. Obviously, their second MLS Cup appearance in the last 4 years. But in between, there's been inconsistency in there. Well, I don't know. It's a strange way to ask this, but can you just explain Portland to me? Why are they so up and down, and can they be up on this day?
Well, they've been up for the past 2 months, right? It was weird watching them because, they had a coaching change in the offseason. They really did not look good for the first half, three quarters of the season. And then something just clicked in September-ish, August, September-ish, where they realized they need to, throw all their visions of playing pretty soccer and playing a certain way out the window if they wanted to make the playoffs. They had to get down and dirty, as I mentioned when we were talking about Atlanta. It was the same thing. They had to fight and scrap their way into the playoffs. They got in by the skin of their teeth. And what I've noticed from them in this playoff run is that they've been playing extremely well, even better on the road than they've been playing at home. And luckily for them, maybe not luckily for them, but luckily for them statistically, this game is on the road because they've been playing much better on the road over the past 2 months than they have been at home, and it's worked for them. They've won their way on the road through these playoffs, and now they know that their final game is going to be in arguably the toughest road venue in MLS, where it's going to be 73,000 fans all against them. And with the home record that Atlanta has and the massive home field advantage that Atlanta has, everything's going to be stacked against them. I don't really understand the team either, to be quite honest, in terms of, you know, how they got there. I just noticed that something changed in the, you know, as the weather started turning, so did the Portland Timbers, and they realized that, you know, they're not the most talented team in MLS. They're not even the most talented team in the West, but they are representing the Western Conference based on their ability to win soccer games when it mattered. You know, they, even if you look at the Western Conference final against Sporting KC, they really did nothing at home. They did nothing in front of their own fans, and then they went into KC and they took down a relative Western Conference juggernaut in Sporting KC with a lot of goals and a lot of great moments. And you know, their game changers, the Diego Valeris and Sebastian Blancos, those are the guys that took over when they needed to. And it's a very similar case for both teams in MLS Cup. But I do think that overall, Portland has a much lower talent base in terms of their overall team. And I think they've kind of accepted that. So they've decided that they're not going to try to play the dogmatic style that they played under Caleb Porter for so many years, where it was all about, you know, the possession game and passing your way into trouble. No, they knew that they needed to get the ball to delay Diego Valeri as soon as possible, or Sebastian Blanco as soon as possible, and kind of not hope for the best, but make it so that they have all the right opportunities to make it the best. And that's what I see out of this Portland team is that they've really kind of become more than the sum of their parts. And you know what? It might work out for them in the end. They may just go to Atlanta and silence that massive crowd. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you a philosophical question here. I've debated with this on Twitter for years with people that complained during playoff time. The Red Bulls fans were the latest to do it this year. I'm sure that if Atlanta does not win this game and the Portland Timbers walk away in the confetti at the end of the day, that there will be a lot of people in Atlanta screaming that the format of MLS is unfair. Is the format of MLS, any playoff league, unfair, Rudy?
It's not unfair because everybody knows it going in. It's not like they changed the format in the middle of the season. It's not like MLS just said, okay, you know what, now we're going to do it this way. You know in March how the format is. Before the first kick, you know what's happening. The teams know what it takes to get to MLS Cup. They know what is required, but it's executing it, and it's being able to put teams that are able to do that. You know, as we've seen over the years, the Supporters Shield, unfortunately, isn't seen as big as MLS Cup. It's just the way it is. It's just the way North American sports are. It's just ingrained in the culture here. But I do feel that the Supporters Shield has become more relevant over the past 3-4 years than it has in the preceding year before that. But it's still going to be secondary to MLS Cup. And so as long as MLS Cup is the main ultimate prize, this is going to be the format. Yeah, you know, the playoff format itself might change, as we've heard rumblings that it's going to be all single elimination next year. There's going to be no home and homes. It's going to be a much shorter kind of run to the cup, but it's still going to be a playoff. Right? Is Champions League an unfair format? You know, I don't think so. Everybody knows. Is the World Cup an unfair format? Is the Gold Cup an unfair format? These are all playoff type competitions that the teams going in know exactly what they are. It's only unfair if the rules change in the middle of it, or, you know, there's some blatant kind of favoritism going on in terms of refereeing or whatever. Again, we can debate all those things as they happen, but the structure of the tournament. And it's really two tournaments, the regular season and the playoffs. The structure of MLS as it is not unfair, because all the teams have bought into it and they all agree to this every year. The competition committee goes through it and they make little tweaks here and there, you know, to the playoffs and to the regular season. And it's taken to a vote by the Board of Governors, and they're the ones who accept it. So I patently reject this idea that it's unfair. It's completely fair. It may not be the best team that wins. I think the last couple of years it has been the best team. Well, maybe the last couple of years, but last year for sure. And I think the years that LA won it, it's been the best overall team that's won it. And if Atlanta, I think, wins it this year, it'll be the best overall team that wins it as well. But, you know, sports is sports. It's not just played on paper. So it's not always the best overall team that wins regardless. So that's, you know, the cliche is that's why we play the games. And that's what makes sports exciting, because if it was predictable, who would watch it? So I don't think it's unfair at all.
And the winner of the game on Sunday will qualify, if it's Portland, for the CONCACAF Champions League. If Portland loses, it will be the Red Bulls going into the CONCACAF Champions League, joining Sporting Kansas City, TFC as representing of MLS. You have the Houston Dynamo as well, which are there because they won the U.S. Open Cup, and Atlanta is there as well. TFC's opponent is a team from Panama, Independiente. What's your thought, first of all, on the new format that we're seeing for the second year and on TFC's maybe luck of the draw? Because Kansas City could have been the opponent off the get-go.
Yeah, I think TFC is kind of they got a little bit. The luck of the draw is that they've their karma is coming back to them, because last year they had to run the gauntlet to get to MLS Cup final, and they came, of course, as we all know, within a Marky Delgado wide open sitter of winning the entire thing after running through Tigres and Club America and having to go through Chivas as well. Now it's a little bit easier. Of course, you don't want to overlook your opponent. I don't know anything about this team from Panama, to be quite honest. I know about two Panamanian teams. Arabia Unido is one of them. Of course, we've seen them before in Champions League play. I don't know much about this team, but they made it this far. They've got to be, you know, they've got to be studied, and they've got to be given respect. But yeah, it's definitely a little bit of a let off for TFC, especially given their recent history in this tournament, where they've had to kind of run against the biggest teams in Mexico. But that being said, you know, they can't take them for granted, because we just seen that the season that TFC has had in MLS, and it was a complete letdown. There's very valid reasons for that, but this is their first chance to kind of erase that and put that in the rearview mirror and say, you know what, this is a clean fresh slate. Yes, we have a lot of the same players, and I'm sure they'll have a few different players as well, but they're going to still have a lot of the same core that didn't do so well last year in MLS. But this is their chance to start anew. So I think the fact that they're able to start off a little softer than they were last year, and I don't even know if that's the case, because they started off against Colorado last year before they had to run the Mexican gauntlet.
That's true.
So it may be the same. At least they won't have to play in minus 25, you know, setting records for the coldest soccer game on record, professional soccer game, I should say. But it, you know, maybe it allows them to ease into the tournament a little bit more than they could last year, when basically they had to jump both feet into the fire, and that's what derailed their entire season. So maybe this is a kind of a blessing in disguise for them.
Just so listeners know, if it goes chalk on TFC's half of the bracket, there's a Monterrey with Alianza. Monterrey should be the winner there. Herediano, Atlanta United. Atlanta should win. So you have Monterrey, Atlanta in the quarterfinal. The other one would be Toronto versus either Toluca or SKC. I imagine Toluca could beat SKC. So Toronto might have a Mexican gauntlet of sort of facing Toluca in the quarterfinals, and then Monterrey in the semifinal. Monterrey is one of the last teams in the La Liguilla right now, the playoffs of the winter season in Mexico. But before we let you go, Rudy, I'm going to ask you this question. It's MLS Cup week. We're just a few days away from December 8th. Atlanta or Portland?
You know what? The more I think about it, when the teams were first decided last week, I thought Atlanta just going to run over them. But the more I thought about it, and the more I've done, you know, these kind of hits on podcasts or radio shows, and I've kind of explained it to the listeners and also to myself, I see Portland giving them a much harder time. I do think that Atlanta will win. I don't think it will be a blowout. I think that Portland will score a goal. I think that Portland will make the Atlanta United sweat a little bit, because I think that Portland has been battle tested, and they've had to be the underdogs in some very tough environments already, and they're going to do it again. And like I said, I think that they've accepted their role as the lesser talented team, but they have a couple of very good game breakers in Diego Valeri and Sebastian Blanco. But it's going to be a narrow victory for Atlanta. Let's say 2-1 Atlanta.
That would be a fascinating game. Hopefully you are right, because 1-0 yeah. MLS Cup final is not the best. 2-1, that's three goals, that's some cagey end of a match. I'll take it anytime. Thank you, Rudy, for your time today. I hope you have a good MLS Cup week. It'll be a little quieter than it has been for you over the last couple of years in MLS Cup, but enjoy your week.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to eat some barbecue just to pretend I'm there, too. So.
Yeah, why not? Actually, I want some barbecue, but I can't eat solid food yet. So thank you very much, geez. Rudy. Yeah, yeah.
Do you think we can get free wine anywhere, Rudy? Like, do you think that – no? Okay.
We'll have to hook that up somewhere.
Okay. All right.
We'll be right back after this very short break.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sports podcasting network. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. MLS Cup Week, it's December 4th, 4 day before the big game in Major League Soccer. There were big games in Europe last weekend, in the Premier League especially, and we'll get back to those next week. We'll get back to the rest of the program next week, for sure. We're taking a few days off as well next week, but we'll talk about this next week after the season's over. Dwayne, MLS Cup Week, the CCL draw. What's your thought right now on Tuesday? And we're going to ask each other those questions all week long. But right now, Portland or Atlanta?
Against all logic, I'm going to go with Portland right now simply because MLS really is what it comes down to. Yeah. No, look, as Rudy said, I think Portland has the ability to play. They're not going to go at them. They're going to be confident sitting back and absorbing and looking for the break. And they have Valeri, which is a breakout player. And obviously, I think that the key with Atlanta, to beating Atlanta, is to not let them get that space, not let them run. You have to sort of have what New York did wrong was that New York sat back and tried to be passive but didn't try to attack. They didn't really push them in any way so that Atlanta just could run at them in waves. But I think that if Portland can play a bit of a hybrid, sort of that Leicester style that won them the Premier League, where they can get out in the front feet and they have some skill players running up front as they do, then I think that they can cause some problems. The key will be the start of this game to deal with the momentum of the beginning. We said this the last couple of years, and I think as long as MLS is playing in a home venue, this is always, I think, going to be key for the away team, is to survive that initial that starts the game. And
to basically shut up the crowd. Be like, here you go. We scored in the fifth minute. Everyone's like, ooh. Then everyone settles down. The energy is not as high, and it becomes more of a regular season game than a playoff intensive hostile environment.
You let the nerves kick in for the home team. I mean, think about TFC 2016. Stefan Fry standing on his head in the first 10 minutes of that game, and there was a couple really good opportunities that just flashed wide. Jovinko, I believe it was the third or fourth minute of the game in 2016, took a shot that went across goal and missed by about an inch and a half. That goes in. TFC's rolling. They're winning that game. But it didn't, and the nerves started to get up, and Fry started to get into his game, and it, you know, then the save happens, and we all know the rest of the history. You look at the next year, I mean, it was starting to look like the same way. I mean, TFC just had the wherewithal to stay with it last year, and it, you know, Seattle just never could really get into it, and they were missing some key pieces. Seattle last year in the final two, I don't think they were completely healthy. So that they weren't able to take advantage of that. But I think that in both cases, those games were both Seattle pulling the upset, and I think it was an upset in hindsight when you look at it, in 2016, and causing all sorts of problems. It was about the 60th minute until Josie broke through in the second game, even though the momentum was all TFC's way. So it's key. The key is the beginning. You think about the Columbus game when Portland won their title. What happened in the first minute? The keeping error. All of a sudden, you know, this crowd is ready to go and celebrate, and all of a sudden they're pulling the ball out of the back of the net, and it's like, oh my God, what's going to happen now? And they never got back in that game.
Yeah, it's true. It'll be fascinating. And this might change over the week, too. So that's why probably every day, Dwayne and I, for the rest of the week, will ask each other, so, Portland or Atlanta? Right now, it's hard to look away from Atlanta for me. But I still need to look back at more Portland games this week, to look at Gio Savarese's transitions of play this year and how he adapted to certain different teams. They didn't play Atlanta often, only once this year. So you do have that aspect too. Teams that don't necessarily know each other that well, with players that are not necessarily familiar with each other, which is different in the Western Conference playoffs. Teams know each other like the back of their hands. So it'll be fascinating to see how Portland adapts themselves, how Atlanta decides to adapt themselves, because Atlanta could be focused only on them, too, heading into that game if they do try to adapt to Portland and put three guys on Valeri at any given moment, which is the key, I guess. It'll be fascinating. So right now I'm leaning more towards Atlanta, but this is just Tuesday.
Yeah, I have this vision of Kevin standing with like three whiteboards around him and two laptops and just like sort of all going left and right and writing stuff down, these formulas to come down to a conclusion. And then finally on Friday going, 2-1 Atlanta. And
It's probably going to be the case. Kansas City is going to win the 2019 MLS Cup, by the way. So that's where I'm going with it right away. As always, you can follow us on social media at 24th Minute for Dwayne, at Kevin Laramie for myself, at Soccer Today SPN for the show on Twitter, which is live on Twitter as well, by the way. Every Soccer Today is live on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN. Make sure you watch the show there if you want, share the show, talk about the show. Let us know what you think. And thank you for listening on podcasts. If you like what we do, you can give us a little hand on patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. And if you pledge for $2 and more a month, you'll get access to the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast, where Dwayne and I talk about Canadian soccer and Canadian soccer only. We had a special show yesterday. Dwayne and I talked about the first signings in the Canadian Premier League's history, and a little bit about the U17 Women's World Cup. You can get access to this show by subscribing for $2 a month at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. As always, until tomorrow, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie. Have a great MLS Cup week.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.